Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each and every week, we explore different aspects of the world of music, including album reviews, concert reviews, and what we are bringing you this week in music history. Thank you to everyone who has stuck with us through this minor transition. Jake, great job at doing the show by yourself last week. I was really impressed, and my dad said it was really good, too. So, obviously, Jake is here with me again. Jacob Crum, how you doing?
Your dad only thought it was good because that was the least vulgar I've ever been.
Yeah, he actually did say that too.
Yeah.
And of course, along with me is Greg Harvey.
That's me. Hi, everyone.
Yes. So obviously, as Jake explained in the previous episode, we kind of lost our previous studio, but we are in a different studio now, doing great, going strong. And we have more TVs in this room now than we did in the previous place, which is rather hilarious.
We are surrounded by TVs.
Surrounded by giant TVs. It's just the way it is. If you want to help us out, though, you can go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side. It'll take you to Amazon. Do all of your normal shopping. It will not cost you anything extra, but we get a little bit of money back just for you going through our website. So click on that banner or just go through followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. And, of course, we want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show because that's where we are, the Lineup Media Studios. Thanks.
We are here.
We are here, actually in the studios for which we normally don't run out of. But this is where we are now, and this is where we will be for a good long while.
And it means that I can drink a beer.
That is true. Yes. So, yeah. I also wanted to say that if you want, you can find us on Facebook at the Follow the Sound, the group. And we are always posting things on there. We're always willing to have a good conversation about stuff. And I'm always sharing videos and things, random things that I come across. And so please go on Facebook, find us there. Just search for Follow the Sound. You'll see, you know, a lovely little colorful logo there. And join our group. Not to mention, we still are not at 500 members of our group. So if you get there, we will review one of the worst albums ever made, picked out by our one and only Jacob Crum.
The worst.
One of the worst. I don't say the worst because I'm still, it could be really, really, really bad, but I'm still not going to call it the worst.
So it's Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes.
Be a Man is the name of the album.
Yes.
And it's produced by Jimmy Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Jimmy Hart, the wrestling manager of the Hart Connection?
Yes.
He wore a suit that was polka-dotted with hearts,
mm-hmm.
carried a bullhorn. And if you didn't know, he also produces every entrance music, every piece of entrance music for the WWE.
Nice.
Wow.
So I Am a Real American, so on and so forth.
Yes.
All Jimmy Hart.
So if we get to 500 members on our Facebook group, we will review that album, and I'm sure we will have a blast doing it, but
so,
I'm sure we will also die a little inside while doing it.
You know that Jacob and I are roommates at the moment?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure Jacob was taking a shower and he was blasting this album full volume, like, just to listen to. Yeah, so I got a little taste of the Macho Man Randy Savage rap. And not only that, but you know a lot of those words, sir.
I have been tortured with that music before, and I'm a bit of a masochist in the shower.
So there you go.
Yeah, oh. The water was extra steamy. Oh, that burns so good.
Also, you can find us on Twitter at IFollowTheSound. Now, let's get on to our music history episode.
Okey-dokey.
We are going from March 12th on through March 16th. So this will be, actually, there's not a whole ton of stuff that happened this week, but we picked out a couple of really good things, I think, and we're going to have ourselves a nice, good show here. But let's go ahead and start off with March 12th. And Jake, what do you got?
1957, Marlon Jackson of the Jackson 5 and the Jackson family dynasty is born in Gary, Indiana. His twin brother, Brandon, is also born but dies less than 24 hours later. We had mentioned Brandon previously when talking about Michael.
Yes.
So, bit of a correction here. I had thought that Brandon was actually Michael's twin brother. He's not. He's Marlon's.
Okay. So, there you go.
Shout out to Gary, Indiana.
Shout out to Marlon Jackson.
Shout out to the shouters.
So we started off kind of like with a weird birthday and a death. That's kind of, we've never done that before.
Yeah. Here's the question, though.
Yes.
What is your favorite Jackson Family Dynasty song that's Michael or Janet?
What? So does that mean the Jackson 5 doesn't count or does?
Yeah, no. Jackson 5 does not count. I'm talking Jermaine, Tito, Marlon, or LaToya album.
I honestly can't tell you.
You're asking me to name a song I don't know.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat too, yeah.
How do you not know Jermaine
Jackson? I
want
to say that I'll Be There blocked it. Is my favorite. But
blocked
that,
it from my mind.
You don't count that one.
I don't.
So I don't know what to say. What was it? LaToya Jackson? She probably has something.
LaToya. I can't name a LaToya Jackson song.
She did that one song that I don't know.
Whatever her biggest hit was.
Yes,
that's
the one I'll pick. Whatever that biggest one was.
Great question, Jake.
All right, let's move on to...
This is the wrong crowd for that question.
Wrong crowd. Let's get on to 1974 when John Lennon and Nilsson get drunk and disorderly at a Smothers Brothers comedy show at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. They get thrown out, and Nilsson takes heat in the press for being a bad influence on John Lennon. Nilsson said later on, "It ruined my reputation for 10 years. Get one Beatle drunk, and look what happens."
Pretty bad when your reputation is ruined because you're a bad influence on a spousal abuser.
Yeah. No, I mean, Lennon had no problem getting drunk on his own. So, we all know this.
Wow.
And they always said he was a mean drunk.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was pretty cool when he was on drugs, but when he was drunk, he got violent. So.
Wow.
Yep.
The other side of the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
The dark side.
True.
Yeah, they should have had like a black album. okay, so this next story kind of started leading us into all kinds of musical drama in the near future. So basically, in 1998, attorneys for Korn send a cease and desist demand to a Michigan assistant principal, Plews, who suspended a student for wearing a Korn t-shirt to school. Nowadays, this is a whole different can of worms. But I think this was like the first time we really heard about this being an issue. So, according to the letter, Plews's comments to the media constitute trade defamation against Korn, and thus the band is entitled to significant compensatory and punitive damages from Plews and the Zeeland Public Schools Board of Education.
Wow, went after the Board of Education to boot.
So the letter continues, "We are anxious to hear your excuse for such comments, as I am sure your lawyers will inform you the term Korn does not and cannot constitute obscenity under any recognized legal definition." Then the letter referenced Korn song saying, "There are no official lyrics to Korn songs. They're not printed on any of our albums, and they're not posted on our official website."
Is that true?
At the time, it was. I don't know about it, like what their dust jackets lately have been like.
Huh.
But the t-shirt just said Korn. That was it. Just said Korn.
And they're stylized in their font and everything.
And so, yeah, you can't just kick. You can't tell somebody they can't wear a shirt that just has the band's name on it.
Yeah,
it'd be different if the band's name was obscene, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
I mean, I've seen several the liner notes for several Korn albums, and it's just photos.
Huh. I like that. That's a cool idea, though.
It is a cool idea,
especially
if
you know half the lyrics are like oom da bop oom diggy diggy.
Yeah. So so Principal Plews had stated in the media that their lyrics were obscene, and that's why she had banned the shirt. And their argument was like, "Look, you don't know what our lyrics are. In fact, nobody does because we don't post the official lyrics.
Not even a principal.
Yeah.
Assistant principal."
Oh, excuse me. Assistant principal.
I know. That's where all the authority lies.
Yeah, I was giving her too much credit. Or him. I don't even know. Doesn't matter, really.
It goes to show the principal was like, "Whoa, not my circus. Not my monkeys."
I was trying to find a picture of Plews just to see if the name matches what I think.
If the name matches the stuck upness of the of the story.
Yes.
Something between the Monopoly guy and
something like that, yeah. Oh man. Okay, so
what's the Monopoly guy's name? Hang on. It's Uncle Moneybags? Is that right?
Something like
something
that.
Something
was just like Mr. Moneybags or something.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I think so.
And if you honorific. Know the answer, find us on Facebook and let us know.
Moneybags.
Mr. Moneybags.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the March 12th birthdays. We already had one, though, with Marlon Jackson, but we got some more, some earlier ones. In 1917, Leonard Chess, co-founder of Chess Records, is born Lezior Szmul Sis in Motol, Poland.
Good job.
Nice. That's,
I'm sure I butchered that as far as Polish goes, but... you know, that was pretty close.
Hmm. Yeah, no, you're probably right. I was thinking that a Y might be a hard I, but I think you're right on that.
Yep. Either way.
Cause ski, you know,
I mean, yes. But if you, if you guys, I know we've talked about Chess Records before. If you don't know about Chess Records, then you're missing out. They were one of the primary influences in blues and R&B, developing like that Chicago sound that everybody was known for. Just so many great artists came out of there, including the one and only St. Louis legend of Chuck Berry. And he went through Chess Records and did recordings there and had a blast. And so, yeah, there's... ton of great artists that came through Chess Records. So check that out if you have not. Also, if you find those, like if you find the singles and it's sold anywhere, snap those up because they're important. So, but yeah, that's what I got for 1917.
Okay.
On this day.
All right. Well, another fine birthday in 1948. James Taylor, singer and songwriter, famous for the classic hits like Fire and Rain and You've Got a Friend, is born in Boston, Massachusetts. Here's one of those fine James Taylor tunes now.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. Walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again.
So there you go. That is James Taylor.
The birthday boy himself.
Yeah, no, that was, I love that. I love that song. That's such a great song.
Yes. Fire and Rain.
good stuff. So what are we moving on to next?
A new day.
A new day.
Yes.
Yes, moving on to March 13th. Let's start this sucker off in 1976. The Four Seasons hit number one in the USA with December 1963, better known as Oh What a Night, which is still one of my all-time favorites. This actually made them the only act to chart a number one hit before, during, and after the Beatles. So there you go.
Wow.
I like that. That's pretty good. Next.
Okay. 2013. Ken Casey of the Dropkick Murphys takes out a skinhead. You know what? I'm going to start over, and I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
Because this is a cheery story.
Okay.
2013. Ken Casey of Dropkick Murphys takes out a skinhead after seeing him raise a Nazi salute. A crowd had gathered on stage for the encore, and seeing the fan across the stage, Casey hit him to the floor and laid him out. Calmly returning to the base, Casey proclaims that Nazis are not welcome at Dropkick Murphy shows.
They're not welcome here either.
That is true. We do not support Nazis.
Illinois Nazis.
Sound, especially Illinois Nazis.
Illinois Nazis.
And they do exist. So.
And their damn red Volvos.
Yes. So.
Living in Illinois.
That's it. That's We have two stories for that day. So I told you we didn't find much. So we're kind of flying through these. But let's go ahead and move on to birthdays. In 1939, one of my favorites, Neil Sedaka is born in Brooklyn, New York.
Who's that?
Neil Sedaka was one of these guys who was, you know, doing the songwriter thing, just trying to get some stuff together, and produced a couple of his own songs and became quite famous for it. So Neil Sedaka has a really high voice. I know it's funny. He almost comes across entirely as gay, but he's not. He's married, bunch of kids, happily married.
Okay.
To a woman, not to a man, sorry.
I don't want to get like on a delicate subject, but what I have noticed that I thought was really interesting was the population of men out there that like this guy who you think would be gay, but they're totally straight. And that throws me off sometimes. Here's my question. James Corden, isn't he has a wife, right? He's married, he's straight.
Yep.
Right? And maybe it's the British accent, but I always, like, when I first saw him, I thought he was gay, and he's totally straight.
Yep.
So,
But Neil Sedaka is still alive. He is still around. He is 78 years old.
Wow.
And cruising along. But
still
yes,
wearing rhinestones?
I'm sure on some level he is.
Okay.
My favorite song of his, though, is still Calendar Girls, because that's just one of my favorite ones that he did. He did Calendar Girl, Little Devil, You Mean Everything to Me, Happy Birthday, Sweet 16, and, of course, Breaking Up is Hard to Do, which is a classic. So there you go. Neil Sedaka.
I remember Neil Sedaka from his, like, 1990s daytime television cameos.
Yes. He did
just,
a lot of that.
For whatever reason, it was always like, and today we have our 90s TV stars would be from Coming to America with Eddie Murphy.
Arsenio Hall.
Arsenio
Hall.
We have Arsenio Hall. We have Rosie O'Donnell and Neil Sedaka. It's like, for whatever reason, he was always the third. He was always the third guest.
He's just releasing those greatest hits of Neil Sedaka.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
All the time.
Nice. Well, another fine birthday on this day as well, you guys. 1979 in Chicago, Illinois, representing. It's Common, born Lonnie Rashid Lynn Jr. And if you're not familiar with Common, here's a little track from him called The People.
People. This is Street Radio for Unsung Hero. Riding in the Rego, trying to stay legal. My daughter found Nemo, I found a new primo. Yeah, you know how we do. We do it for the people and the struggle of the brothers and the folks. The lovers of the dope. Experiment to discover hope. Scuffle for notes. The rougher I wrote, times was harder. Went from rock starter to the voice of a martyr. Why white folk focus on dogs and yoga? My people on the low end trying to ball and get over. Lyrics are like liquor for the fallen soldier. From the bounce to the house, it's all our culture. Every day we hustling, trying to get them custom riffs.
Yes.
That flow.
Oh, man, I love that.
Yeah, Common is a flow master.
He is very, very good at that. Also, very talented actor.
You might know him from Suicide Squad, Wanted, or Hell on Wheels.
Yeah. Yes. Hell on Wheels was the one that I first noticed him. As in being like a quality actor, because he put in some great performances in that show.
It's been a lot more recently. I mean, because Common's been a household name for years, but we've just kind of started seeing him pop up on TV more lately.
TV, yeah. He was in a couple of films, though. Like, I remember Smoking Aces, which is sort of a forgettable action flick, but it had Common in it. It was an ensemble cast.
He's been in a bunch of movies and stuff just randomly shows
up. Contrary to what Childish Gambino
says, Now You See Me.
I think that Common is the best rapper of any actor. Hmm. But that's just my opinion.
Ooh, that's an interesting one to bring up.
I mean,
Ludacris.
Ludacris.
Ludacris has been in bigger stuff, though.
That's true.
Maybe.
The Academy Award winning Crash. For movie of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, that won Best Picture.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, he was also in Fast and Furious. So there you go.
That is also true.
Actually, Ludacris was in Hustle and Flow, which is one of my favorites, too. So There's my point.
There you go. All right, what do we got next?
1989, De La Soul releases their debut album, 3 Feet High and Rising. The sample-heavy, Paisley-powered LP becomes it's a classic. You ask anybody, like, an album that changed the game when it comes to rap or hip-hop, De La Soul is the one everyone throws around.
Just for the record, this is March 14th now.
Yes, a new day.
A new day.
A new day has dawned.
No, I get it. The problem is that I've never really listened to De La Soul.
Really?
I've heard the hits, and that's about it. So I've never delved into their catalog.
I can honestly say that I've never put on one of their albums, like front to back. I haven't
but
ever
But I know that sound.
One. Yeah.
I know the De La Soul sound.
Oh, yeah.
And I hear it when other people copy it. And so that's what cracks me up. So they definitely did something very definitive in their day.
Well, and like this album was released in 89, but like you can't put together like a 90s hip hop playlist without putting them on it.
True.
Either.
True.
You know, it's just kind of one of those things where when you're feeling nostalgic and you've got the playlist going, like De La Soul always pops up on the shuffle and everybody just kind of stops and grooves to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, we've got another exciting fact for March 14th. A little more recent was 1998, weeks after Johnny Cash's Unchained wins the Grammy for Best Country Album, his producer Rick Rubin takes out a full-page advertisement in Billboard with a photo of the singer giving the middle finger, along with the text, "American Recordings and Johnny Cash would like to acknowledge the Nashville music establishment and country radio for your support." Here's a big bird for you.
Yes, for those of you who don't know, Nashville Music and Country Radio did not support Johnny Cash at all during that album or during that time. And yeah,
And so they just did something really, you know, real low key.
And Johnny wouldn't have done that. Johnny wouldn't have like done a full page ad. Rick Rubin did it with his own money. Deliberately, like, just so he could actually do that.
It's pretty boss, though.
It is one of the best baller moves I think I've ever seen in
music
industry.
Everyone has seen that photo because it's kind of become the photo of Johnny Cash.
You can buy posters of it all over the place. So.
But it's like from 1969, I think, at San Quentin.
Yeah, San Quentin. Where he's like in front of the camera, he just flips the bird.
Whoever was the photographer for the show, was taking a picture and he was trying to get his attention.
Yeah.
And somebody next to him, a prisoner who was there, yelled, "Hey, Johnny, give one for the warden." And when he turned around and looked at the camera, he gave it the finger.
Nice.
Yes.
So, yeah. There you go. But
that's how you
think about 98. So the big acts then would have been Shania Twain and like Garth Brooks.
Yeah, yeah. Still. So, yeah.
Not exactly Walmart country.
That is true. That
Johnny
is definitely
Cash,
true.
Unchained.
But that album is
really
good, yes. Let's go ahead and get on to the birthdays, though. 1933, born on this day in Chicago, Illinois, the one and only Quincy Jones.
The one and only.
The one and only Quincy Jones. Quincy, of course, as you know, musician, producer, songwriter, lord of music. He's recently been in the news for making some very outlandish statements that some people have confirmed to be true, and so there's a lot of craziness involved with that. But all you really need to know about Quincy Jones is that he produced some of the greatest albums of all time, including what is not even arguably, it is the most bought album of all time, and that is Thriller by Michael Jackson. But it was Quincy who was the producer, and he's the one who made those songs what they are.
Wow.
So there you go.
Yeah.
One of these days, I'd like to review Thriller. So.
But he did also produce We Are the World. So.
Yes, and he'd also produced We Are the World with Lionel Richie and a few other people. So, giant group of people. But yes.
Wow.
So yeah, Quincy Jones, all around crazy genius. So
I'm stoked for this next one.
Are you?
Yeah, you know.
You're stoked because in 1951, Charo was born. Maria del Rosso, Mercedes Pilar Martinez Molina Baez in Molina de Segura, Murica, Spain.
Yes.
España.
Yes.
Yeah, Charo. You didn't know. She's a hell of a flamenco guitarist.
There you go. That's, she is not just a pretty face.
That's really great, actually.
I was going to say a pretty chest, but, you know.
But yeah, here's the thing, though, is we just heard how great she is on the guitar there. But what's she memorable for? Oh, you know, coochie coochie. Shaking yes. it and kind of just being a, kind of just being like a ditz.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think of. And I mean, not in an offensive way, but just like that was her shtick.
Yeah.
And yet she has beautiful flying fingers on that flamenco guitar.
Yes, very much so.
Wow.
Very much so.
Hmm.
I like it.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. So,
well, oh. Let's get on to March 15th.
Okay, March 15th is a good day in history. In 2003, band I Truly Enjoy, The Offspring, announced that their new album is going to be called, anyone? Chinese Democracy. If that sounds familiar to you, well, it's because it should be, mocking the long-delayed Guns N' Roses release, Chinese Democracy, which took like, what, 20 years?
Yeah, something
to,
like
to
that.
To actually get put out. Yeah, so The Offspring basically just wanted to kind of steal some of the thunder and poke fun at them for taking so long. Of course, Offspring's lead singer Dexter Holland says that Axl ripped off my braids, so I ripped off his album title. And they probably recorded it in a third of the time. Probably even faster than
that. Probably faster than that.
Oh, well. It's The Offspring, though. They just need to get some power chords, some blast beats going, and, you know, you got a full album right there.
I mean, yeah, true, but Dexter Holland took time out of, you know, researching AIDS cures
to write some more punk rock.
Yeah,
music.
To write some punk rock, whereas, you know, Axl had just been, what?
Taking some time from taking some time.
Pouting for 20 years? Sorry. Did I
Something
say,
like
I did
that.
Say that.
Pouting or powder or one or the other.
Let's go ahead and move on to something a little bit, you know, happier.
A little happier?
Yeah.
Well, 2006, remnants of Fats Domino's two pianos are discovered and saved from Louise, excuse me, saved by the Louisiana State Museum after being salvaged from his home in Ninth Ward, Louisiana, after Hurricane Katrina.
Yes.
So they sat around for, I think, 3 or 4 years before actually being preserved.
Yes.
And there was a campaign, like a fundraising campaign, to raise, I think it was $35,000.
To get them refurbished.
And Paul McCartney put up the first 1,000.
Oh, of course he did.
Of course he did.
But that's like pocket change, so I don't know why he didn't just fund the entire thing.
So the Louisiana State Museum has his white piano on display in the front room.
Nice.
Which was also the centerpiece of his Ninth Ward home.
Mm-hmm.
So it, however, is not functional.
Oh, okay.
So don't hope that you can go down. You can go down there and see it, and it looks, it's beautiful. I've seen photos.
You just can't play it.
You can't play it because
they're damaged, aren't they, from the hurricane?
Well, yeah. I mean, to make it functional, it would be a different piano.
Yeah.
You basically have to replace the entire inside.
Yeah.
Just leave what's authentic.
So
yeah. For those of you who don't know, and I don't know why you wouldn't know this, but of course during Hurricane Katrina, after the levees broke and flooded, completely decimated the Ninth Ward, as well as a bunch of other places too. But the Ninth Ward particularly got hit because a lot of those houses are really close together, and it just annihilated that entire place. And even to this day, there are still vast swaths of just empty land where there used to be houses.
That's crazy.
It's pretty insane. I mean, and they were still finding like just random things all over the place, like all the time for years and years after. Even probably to this day, they're still probably finding random things from that. So it's amazing though that at least something was recovered and at least presented and preserved. So
yeah.
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, we know how bad it was with the flood of 93 around here. Like, yeah. What kinds of crazy stuff you can see afterwards, too. Just the damage from a flood. And then, of course, yeah. New Orleans being, like, below sea level to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to think about some
there
of that.
There was a paintball place down in southern Illinois somewhere west of Cairo that got a boat.
Like, just landed in their field?
Yeah, it came in their field. Now, it wasn't the 93 flood. It was the one after that.
I don't know.
I can't remember which one that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they got a boat. They put up notice for it for a couple of years. You know, anybody wants their boat back, you can come get it.
just bring a big trailer.
Yeah. But nobody ever did. So then they cut the deck down because it had been damaged and turned it into like a flat platform. And for the longest time, they were doing amphibious assaults across the lake in their field.
Wow.
Which is awesome. That's cool. Like the coolest thing ever. However, I think somebody fell off of it and they're like, okay, we got to. Okay, this is too done. Crazy. We got to stop doing amphibious assaults on paintball. You can't.
That's nice. Cool. I like that idea, actually. That's great.
So, yes. Something good at least happened after the fact, and I'm quite happy about that. Weirdly enough, for the first time, my wife and I are going to be going to New Orleans for a concert. I haven't been to New Orleans in a very long time, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing my family down there in their home state as opposed to the times when they all come up here. So I'm really looking forward
to this. And you can go through the Park District and check out the Real World House.
Oh, God.
highlight of the trip.
We'll figure that part out there, Jake. I'm just looking forward to going back to New Orleans again because, you know, like it's going to be in the middle of August, so it's probably going to be stupid hot. So that's not going to be fun. But I'm looking forward to it and seeing my family down there. So they went back and they rebuilt after Katrina, so I'm quite happy. They love their city, and I'm looking forward to seeing them and experiencing it some more. But let's go ahead and move on to the birthdays. What do we got?
Yeah, March 15th has a couple of cool birthdays. The first one in 1972, Mark Hoppus. He's the bass player and co-lead singer for Blink-182, and he's born in Ridgecrest, California. A big inspiration for me growing up, Mark Hoppus, both his vocals and his bass playing skill, because he's the better vocalist from Blink-182, as well as a great bass player doing fast stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He meant a lot to me growing up. Learn how to play bass and all that.
Do you know who didn't mean a lot to me? The next birthday on our list.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on now.
1975, a guy named William Adams is born in Los Angeles. You know him better as Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas.
Yes.
Mazel tov.
So here's the funny thing that I like about Will.i.am. One, he actually is a good music producer, and he is talented at coming up with interesting pop songs and sort of changing trends and stuff. Number two, he was on The Voice UK with Tom Jones and Jesse J and who the other dude was.
I like Jesse J.
Now, he is on The Voice Australia. With the lead singer of Good Charlotte. And I think it's Good Charlotte.
What?
And Ricky Martin and then one Australian girl.
Are there no famous Australians? What the heck?
There are tons. They just don't have them on The Voice. So that's all I know about Will.i.am. I'm sure next he'll be showing up in like The Voice Germany or something, you know, some random thing like that.
Mm.
But, so there you go.
Will.i.am.
There aren't many of his songs that I truly enjoy, but there are a few that are just top-notch songs.
Dude.
I still think Don't Lie by the Black Eyed Peas is one of the best songs they ever came up with.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Black Eyed Peas killed it for a while there.
Yeah, they did. They were unstoppable.
Where's the Love? One of the best songs ever. Ever. Ever, really. Let's be honest. But then, yeah, Monkey Business and Ella Funk, both of those albums, dude, were top-notch. Bunch of hits on them, but yet, like, content, too. Like, mm-hmm. good rapping, good beats. Some of the songs, like the story, the lyrics, were, you know, deep and meaningful. I mean, and then there were a few of those songs, like you said, you know, like
the party songs.
Like Don't Funk With My Heart was a little more, you know, self-explanatory. But like, good stuff. I wish that they went back to that old rapping.
I may have said this before, but I'm kind of, I've got like a mild case of PTSD when it comes to I got a feeling that tonight's going to be a good night, because I was at a New Year's Eve thing at one of our local casinos, because they're going to have a big balloon drop, and Jessica wanted to see a balloon drop because she'd never seen one before. And we were standing there. We're all packed into like this area where the balloons are, and they're playing that song, and the dude's got one of those like party horns, you know, that's like, bah, 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 you know? No, no, not like one of the air horns, like one of the ones that you, like a birthday party horn. Yeah. And he was blowing into it to the rhythm of the song. So, burr, 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 burr. And like, he did it the entire song. And so now I hear that whenever I hear that song.
What, you hear? And that
one note. Like, there's no other notes to that horn. It's just the rhythm of the song.
Can I just say, one of my favorite things working in radio is when the people call in and they do that exact same thing to you. Like, can you play that song? It goes, do, 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 do. You know the song? No, I'm sorry, I don't. You know, it's the one that goes, do, do, do.
You know, it's so hilarious. I used to love call-in shows. And now I hate them. Like, I don't know if it's because I'm a content producer now, but if somebody calls in and they're bad at being on the phone and they draw out and it's annoying.
Next week we're announcing call-ins for Follow the Sound.
It drives me crazy.
Everybody, just sing your favorite song to us.
Actually, on a minor note, side note here, we are going to be actually live streaming our shows here in the near future. As soon as I can get the setup going and get ourselves a nice little template.
Nobody but with wants that open, see this.
With that open, though, we can also then have like Facebook going and or like the chat going. And if anybody else wants to watch or comment or whatever, then they can totally do that. I think we're pretty entertaining live. So we're a lot. I feel like we're more animated like in person than just what you might hear on the microphone. Because I move my hands quite a bit when I'm talking about something passionately.
Yeah, I shake like a chihuahua over here in my
seat. Not to mention, you can then see our facial expressions when we go through something, which always cracks me up.
Yeah, when we sing.
Because sometimes we say things and we sound happy and excited, and we're not.
We're not at all.
We're dead inside.
Mm-hmm. You need to see Jacob's facial expressions when he talks about, like, the stuff that really drives him nuts. His sarcasm is dripping, but you just need to see his facial expression. Yeah.
So, yes, we will be doing that in the near future. Hopefully we can get that set up soon. And I'm looking forward to that. But
anyway,
what are we moving on to?
Happy birthday, Will I Am.
Yes, happy
Maybe
birthday,
Maybe one of these days you'll really make, like, reach the pinnacle of your career and make Fergie listenable.
Oh, God.
His tombstone will read, Will I Was.
Will I Was. Not bad. Not bad.
So.
A new day.
March 16th.
Yes.
And we have another classic. And it goes a little something like this.
Sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home.
That, of course, is Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, released in 1968. Of course, singing that is Otis Redding, the one and only Otis Redding. And it becomes a hit number one, becoming the first ever posthumous number one hit. That's amazing.
Just a great song.
It's a brilliant song, and it's different than everything that he did up until then.
I would have guessed Hank Williams would have been the first posthumous number one, but I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're
a different chart.
You never know.
Or it could have been before, was like 48 before Billboard Hot 100?
Yeah, it might have been.
Probably.
You know, before they did that, you know, and who knows? They do different things here. You know, have different charts for different things. It's sometimes easy because then you can be like, it's number one on the charts. Okay, which chart?
The South Pennsylvania Polka Charts.
You know. So, yeah, something goofy like that. Or it's like, you know, oh, we're number one on the Korean charts. But you can still claim that you're number one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so that's always kind of goofy. But I'm sure this absolutely was number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So during that time. But yeah.
Also, Brian, I just want to say, you almost make me nauseous with how much of a sucker you are for the vocals of a vulnerable man.
What do you mean?
Any like vocal where somebody sounds super vulnerable, you just like eat up. You're like, oh, that's my sound.
The emotion.
I do. Well, I like emotional singers. I've always liked emotional singers. That's my thing. I like anybody who can actually like, you know, create that emotion in a sound, even if they're not experiencing it themselves. Like if they can create that emotion in someone else just through their singing or just through the song that they're doing, I'm impressed by that. And that's what I try to do whenever I write a song. So I like that. That's all I got, Jake.
Okay.
I'm defending myself.
Yeah.
Against your weirdness.
You have never caught on.
You're a pessimist.
I'm not a pessimist. I'm actually just incapable of complimenting you.
That's true. You are right. That's been the
like,
truth.
When
for
I'm
a long
cutting
time.
You down, I'm actually being sweet.
Oh,
and you just don't get that.
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. I just don't care.
Okay. I'm just saying, like,
wow.
Like the sweetest thing that a grown man's ever said to me, you ready? Was your fat ass didn't break the stairs, did it? Cause I took a bad spill at work like 10 years ago, down like 40 stairs. And the guy I was working with, who's this like really old curmudgeon, his name's Bill, comes like running up to me. I could see the panic in his eyes. And as soon as he saw that my legs were still attached to me, he pointed to a spot where a forklift had run into this steel I-beam and said, your fat ass didn't break the stairs, did it? Look at that. So it's like, it's like, all right. Yeah, now that you're okay, we're back to
The compassion of that man.
It was. It was the most
genuine concern.
It was the sweetest, most compassionate thing anyone's ever done for me.
Oh, my baby. My poor stairs. What have you done, you monster?
Yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah, yeah.
We have another story.
That we do.
1972, the Dripping Springs Reunion Festival kicks off near Austin, Texas. Why are we talking about this? Because it was a failed festival. It was envisioned as the Woodstock of country music. The three-day event featured performers Willie Nelson, Earl Scruggs, Bill Monroe, Kris Kristofferson, Loretta Lynn, Buck Owens, and Dottie West. The festival was very poorly promoted and was a giant flop. The attendance was expected to be near 200,000, about 180, and 20,000 people showed up combined over the entire 3 days. However, 2 years later, Willie Nelson used the same site for his first 4th of July picnic concert, which became an annual event and helped establish Austin as a destination for music festivals.
Willie Nelson single-handedly pulls a bigger audience than Willie Nelson and friends.
I know, right?
Okay.
I like that. That's a good story.
So there you go. So Willie Nelson and Austin City Limits, thank you for creating Austin as we know it today.
Yeah, if only it was closer.
I know, right?
Yeah.
If only Texas was closer, man. How long does it take to drive through Texas? Seriously.
Well, why does Texas have to be so big?
I'm not joking. I have done the Austin to St. Louis drive in 1 day. It is not good.
1 day?
1 day.
It's rough.
Wow.
It's like a minimum of 14 hours. Minimum 14 hours. And so if you stop, if you do anything, if you like get lunch or whatever, you're just adding on time to that. It is not good. It is the most tired I have ever been in my life driving back to St. Louis. And I think I slept for like 12 hours after that.
I did Key West to St. Louis straight.
Wow.
One driver.
Nice.
Me.
Yeah.
24
well, I did
hours.
All, I did all of Austin, so all of Austin to St. Louis.
Whose fault is that, Jake?
Well, here's the thing, man. I slept for like 12 hours ahead of like going to it. I worked a 20-hour conference day. Okay. And then I drove from Orlando to Key West, crashed for 12 to 13 hours, and then drove straight back in 24 hours.
I got to Key West, slept, woke up, and left.
Pretty much. I mean, pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty almost exactly. How but exciting. Everyone was really everybody that got to go to the beach in Key West and swim was really happy and grateful. So
wow.
I guess that's
well,
why.
That was nice
of
you. Good job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, this next story is a real hoot and holler as well. In 1995, Eazy-E released a statement announcing that he has AIDS. And also that he has fathered 7 children with 6 different women. Sounds like a good time to announce both, right? Unfortunately for Eazy-E, he passed away 10 days later.
Yes.
That was the strangest press release I've ever read.
Which came first, the AIDS or the
children? Was all in one. It was all in one thing. It was really weird, and I kind of thought, like, oh, okay, so the Book of Revelations is factual, and, like, the world's going to end soon. It was such a weird, it was just such a weird event when that press, when I read that.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
You know, it's interesting learning from the Straight Outta Compton movie. That, like, Eazy-E was the one guy in the group who, like, was not a rapper, could not rap, like, had no rapping experience, and was just, like, friends with the rappers. And they were all like, okay, Eazy, here's your verse. And then he ended up being, like, the biggest name from the group because they gave him that hot beat with Boys in the Hood. But it just tickles me that, like, he did not want to rap and was not a rapper. And they were like, oh, come on, like good friends and supportive about it. And then he was the one who like got rich and famous and like brought the rest of them with him. Oh, man, what a life. The life and times of Eazy-E.
Yep. So let's get to the birthdays, though. And we got a nice one here. In 1954, Nancy Wilson of Heart is born in San Francisco, California.
And you know, that band actually kicks a lot of ass.
Still.
I caught them live.
Still does.
They did the Heart with Def Leppard at yep. the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Heart rocks, man. They rocked.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like even the songs that you don't know as well, they still get out there and they are kick-ass songs.
Yeah. They're just still a phenomenal group. I think, was it last year or the year before last? When they played at the amphitheater, that was the best show I saw that year. Honestly, best show I saw that year.
That acoustic guitar part of Crazy on You, the intro,
yeah,
was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But we got one more birthday for the week.
We have the best birthday. We have the best birthday we've ever done. 1959. William Jonathan Drayton Jr., Flava Flav himself was born in Long Island, New York, New York.
Flava Flav!
So.
Public enemy number one.
He is one of these dudes that just shows up. Just shows up with his giant clock.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to know.
What time is it, Flav?
Flava Flav is just one of these dudes that will forever be in music history just because.
Oh, yeah. He's a trendsetter for sure.
He is a trendsetter.
So, like, Public Enemy, like, a huge hip-hop group of the 80s and 90s, and one of the most politically voiced groups of their time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Flava Flav being, like, the super animated character, you know, kind of a caricature of himself, who I think lended itself nicely to then his career after music with just being Flava Flav. Like, he's like Dennis Rodman, where he can just be Flava Flav. Like, that's why he was invited, is because he's somebody you want to have at a party. But then also that show, The Flava of Love, where he's got a girlfriend for the entire reality show while he's trying to find his new boo. So he's got like all these women that are trying to date him. But throughout the show, he's then like retreating to his girlfriend and being like, boy, it was a rough day with all those ladies. And she's like, oh, let me give you a neck rub, Flav. And he's just like, thanks, baby. I got another big day of wooing these ladies tomorrow. Like, what the hell? Only Flav of Flav.
That was the realest thing that's ever been on television right there.
He's like, I'm going to give you like a gold clock for your neck. And it's like, oh, it's so heavy. Thank you, Flav.
Look, I love Flav because he is the most quotable man on the planet. Like, just the little bits of knowledge. Like, one thing you can't do with babies, you can't give them steak.
You can't put them back in.
Yeah. Or somebody asked him why he wears Viking helmets. He's like, I wear Viking helmets because the horns define how sharp my brains are.
Well, yeah. Okay. Nope, heard enough.
Yeah, so that is all we got for this week in music history. I know it's a little bit of a shorter episode than we normally would do, but that's
You're
fine.
Welcome.
Yes. You don't have to sit here for another 40 minutes while we go on other random tangents about different random
start
things.
Start talking
in music.
About different types of time pieces.
Yes, yes. So thank you for joining us on this episode of Follow the Sound. I have been your host, Brian Kroc. Remember, if you want to help us out, please go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner, or just go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. Also want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show and using the studios going forward. And yeah, also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Please find our group on Facebook. We are, you know, really wanting to get to that 500 mark so we can review that horrible, horrible album and have ourselves a grand old time. But yeah, along with me, of course, has been Greg Harvey.
Get one Beatle drunk and look what happens.
And Jacob Crum.
My chicken ain't no joke. I ain't scared to go up against the Colonel, taste-wise.
Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.